Tribe of Brashcast with me, Liam Pritchard, and as always, Ross Alexander.
Hello.
So, the curse of the EA cover is struck again. I've literally just finished watching UFC 2 billion and 7, or whatever the hell it is. Uh-huh. And Conor McGregor, in his first fight since being announced as the next UFC cover star, he got choked out. So, you know, the long run continues. For those who don't know, I mean, obviously Ronda Rousey was the initial cover star for UFC 2, which is coming out pretty soon. And in her first fight, since she was announced as the UFC cover star, she had a first loss. She was knocked out pretty dramatically. I know what you're thinking. You know, over here, it's like, well, Messi's on the cover pretty much every year, and he's fine. This seems to be a very US-centric curse. I don't know what the deal is, but that seems to be the case. It seems to happen with Madden a lot, doesn't it? That's where it kind of originated, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I can remember. I think Michael Vick was on it,
mm-hmm.
and then the next year was when he had his whole, oh yeah, I breed dogs for fighting.
How bonkers is that
thing?
I mean, beyond the curse, just the fact that a professional sports star is kind of involved and run to a large degree by what I've heard, a dog fighting ring. I mean, how fuck that is insane. Imagine if you found out that James Milner was heading up an illegal dog fighting ring.
Is he a footballer?
Yeah, he is.
Right, okay.
Oh, yeah, cool. that wasn't going to work. And he's known as Boring James Milner, so I just...
You need to go really big name for me to get a football player. Messi is, but...
Okay, we'll go back. So imagine if Cristiano Ronaldo was caught with an illegal dogfighting ring. Okay, so...
He has been on the cover of FIFA. It was Pro Evo he had his thing with, wasn't it?
Yeah, he was on Pro Evo. So was Messi for a few years. Messi went to FIFA then, and we had a few years. It was like 1 year there was no cover star. The next year, it wasn't close. It was a German player. I can't remember who it was. And at the moment, it's Neymar. He's the big one. But I remember a few years ago, it was Kalina, the referee. Like that was pretty
outrageous. Oh yeah, that was, well, you say a few years ago. That was like a decade ago.
Yeah, that was a fair old while ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, but, I remember that.
But yeah, there's no Pro Evo cover curse that I know of, and there's, as I said, the EA cover curse seems to be very US centric, and whether it be, you know, getting caught in a dog fighting ring, or whether it's injury or poor form, there seems to be no consistency to the curse other than the fact that it's US centric, and that as soon as you show up on that cover, shit is going to go bad for you. That just seems to be the general rule, and it's been proved again with Conor McGregor, who was you know, pretty resoundingly choked out in front of you know, one of the biggest crowds I'm sure the UFC has ever had.
Wow. But I guess it's like the curse of EA's gold. Like, as soon as you take money from EA,
as soon as you dip your hand into that pot,
you've literally sold your soul.
Yeah. But you can imagine what they're like at EA. You know, it's just like, I cannot believe this has happened again. You know, it's going to become a joke, isn't it? How many headlines are going to be about that UFC 2 game with Conor McGregor and Ronda Rousey on the front?
I imagine it's this massive conspiracy, and they're all sat around a giant conference table, like with steepled fingers, going, "Yes, excellent."
You think EA?
Our plan is nearly complete.
I was thinking everyone else is trying to fuck over EA. It's like, listen, I'm going to take the money and I'm going to take the fall.
Like, I just like the thought of EA being, you know, how it keeps on winning these worst company in America.
Yeah, it's nonsense, but yeah,
I find it really amusing to entertain the idea that they might actually be half as evil as like BP or Shell or whoever.
So you're thinking like a Mr. Burns figure secretly behind the scenes, like him, Count Chocula, like on The Simpsons, essentially.
I'm thinking more like Spectre, because I've been watching that.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I see what you mean. Like, they're secretly, they all, like, you know, they have their kind of board meetings, the kind of the standard AGM, EGM, when they say all the right things, but then, like, half an hour later, they go down into a dungeon and sit around in the shadows and speak about how they're nefariously going to take over the world.
Yeah.
You know, I might be able to buy that. I don't get all that EA hate. I mean, they got to make money like anyone else. They've made some poor choices down the line, but then
they're not that bad anymore. No.
As I said, I still stand by the fact that I think EA Access is the best deal in gaming, so I'm not going to complain too much. But yeah, something to think about, EA. Maybe, you know, stop putting people on the cover because you're ruining careers. Think about what you're doing. The other big news this week, movie-related, And, well, I'm not sure if it's divisive so much as, you know, vitriolic, the response to the new Ghostbusters trailer. I bring this up because, obviously, it's come out this week, but we're going to talk about our most anticipated movies of 2016 shortly, and this seems like a great place to start because, obviously, the vitriol was already in place. Like, before anyone saw a screenshot, before anyone saw a trailer, whatever. You know, a screenshot. God, I'm so video gamey, aren't I? But... you know, people had a massive issue with the all-female cast, with the director seemingly. I mean, initially at least, it seemed to be completely... Like, the negativity seemed to be largely geared around the fact that it was an all-female cast, which I find bonkers. And then, unsurprisingly, the trailers come out, and the response from the internet... And I'm not saying reviewers and, you know, movie sites, video game sites, whatever. I'm talking about, you know, the comments pages.
Yeah.
Just horrendous. Just because the trailer came out and I couldn't watch it at the time because I was on the bed, so I was like, oh, I'll just check out the comments just to see what the initial opinion is. It was horrendous, and I was like, oh shit, maybe the trailer is terrible. And then I watched the trailer, I was like, that's not a bad trailer. But yeah. maybe it's just me. I mean, I'd be interested to know what you think about it or what you thought about it.
Well, for me, first and foremost, it's like I'm a big fan of Kristen Wiig. Mm-hmm. Like I find her, like, especially her Saturday Night Live stuff, I find really funny.
Yeah, she's so likable.
And Melissa McCarthy, I have found funny in quite a few films. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. She was really funny in Bridesmaids. I just can't, whenever I think of her, I don't know if you've seen Bridesmaids, but there's scene where they all get food poisoning.
Yeah.
And
totally.
Just her hanging over a sink because it's the only thing she can get close to.
Yeah.
It's quite interesting. She's a very funny, like, almost slapstick actress.
Yeah.
And that's something you don't see very often.
No. I mean, I think physical comedy is incredibly difficult to pull off because bad physical comedy is the worst kind of comedy. And it's quite interesting with Melissa McCarthy because she seems to be playing more the straighter character, one of the straighter characters. She's not playing a traditional Melissa McCarthy character. At least that's what I took from the trailer.
But yeah.
While obviously, you know, she and Kirsten Wiig are the big names, the one I thought came out really well from the trailer was Kate McKinnon, who's playing Gillian Holtzman. She kind of looks like Egon with the hair, you know, with the blonde hair. There was something about her, like, I like the look. I like the attitude. I love that, like, one little line where she's kind of standing there. It's like, is it the hair? Is it the hat? Is it too much?
The visual style, like, I have no issue with how it looks with the character design. I love that the new Ecto-1 is our hearse. That is perfect.
Great. Yeah.
My major issue with the trailer, and this is just with the trailer, not be indicative, but the character dynamics don't gel nicely for me. Like, I'm not talking about how they relate to the original Ghostbusters, because made it very clear that although there's obviously going to be references, they want to be their own film, and that's great because, let's be honest, there's no way you're getting anywhere near a movie as the original.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I actually like the second one as well. People shit like on the second one, but I like it as well.
It's not a great movie, but it's a good one.
Prince Viggo scared the shit out of me when I was a kid.
It's Viggo.
Yeah.
And the bit where his, like, little... the dude who works at the gallery
firm with Sigourney
and shows
Weaver,
up
yeah.
dressed as, like, a ghost nanny. That seems really weird. And he steals the baby.
Oscar off the balcony.
Creepy. Like, I know the end's not as memorable, but when I think of that film, I still think of the song at the end. You know,
and the Statue of Liberty smashing the roof with her torch.
Yeah. Like, it's still visually, it's memorable. Like, it's not as good a film, but it has those visually memorable moments. And of course, it's not as good as the original, but the original is literally one of my favorite films of all time.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's a film that me and my mum love to watch together. It's definitely one of those. This film helped make me a nerd kind of movies.
Yeah. Well, this film actually made me realize when I was a man, funny enough, because it was one of those films like I watched so many times when I was younger, and you watch it a certain way when you're younger. Another film was...
Say it made you feel like, or it made you feel like you were a man?
No, it made me realize I was a man.
Right, okay.
Like, I'd grown up, because the same was with Raising Arizona, which have, I know they're very different films, but have a similar kind of two-layered tone, that kind of slapsticky, almost like anyone can enjoy. And that was the same with Ghostbusters, where I was watching it. It's like, oh, Slimer, Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. And then suddenly, one day, I watched the Ghostbusters again. And I, like, you know, like you watch the scene with Peter and Peter Venkman and Sigourney Weaver's character.
Yeah.
And, you know, when she's possessed and she's on the dinner and she's on the bed and stuff. Yeah. I was like, oh my God, this is all about sex. And I had no idea when I was younger. I watched those scenes. I was like, oh, okay, she's possessed and she's saying silly stuff. But then all of a sudden, one day I watched it. I was like, oh, when she says about being inside her, they're talking about sex. Oh, I see.
And the next morning when you woke up, you had your first little mustache hair.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I was just like, oh, what's this on my lip? And what's going on? But it was just one of those weird ones where I was just like, I can't believe I never used to get that when I was younger. But then suddenly I watched it again and it all kind of clicked into place that there's a lot of adult material in that film. But yeah. That's my point. Like, just to make it clear, like, I'm speaking in defense of this trailer, like, largely because I think the vitriolic attack on it online is very unwarranted. But this is coming from someone who grew up, like, I'm about to turn 34 years old. I was brought up on the Ghostbusters. I watched the TV show. I had the original toys. It's one of my top 10 films of all time. And that's honestly, I mean, it's well up there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't know what people wanted. Like, when people are complaining, did they want this film with, like, Peter Venkman recast as someone else? Is that what they wanted? Because the fact of the matter is, as you've already pointed out, you are not going to recreate the magic of the first film. It's not going to fucking happen. That film was magic in a bottle. You know, I can understand if people are like, well, I just don't want to see another Ghostbusters film. Fine.
Yeah.
But this, at least, it allows them to do something different. You know, if the tone's slightly different, I'm all for it. And the thing is, I don't want to see a rehash. I don't want to see them try to recreate the original, because it won't work. I mean, we've seen it so many times in the past few years with remakes. It just doesn't happen.
Yeah.
So the only thing I have an issue with is, I don't know still, is it a sequel or is it a reimagining? Because a lot of people seem to be saying that it's a reimagining because, oh, you know, they're going to show them creating the technology and it's going to be them kind of dealing with ghosts for the first time. But then at the start of the trailer, they reference the earlier films, and bizarrely they also reference it incorrectly. They say that four scientists saved the world.
Winston wasn't a scientist.
Winston wasn't a scientist.
I've played the first little bit of the Ghostbusters game, which came out in the Xbox 360 PS3 generation,
like 2010 2011 something like that.
And apparently it references Winston talking about his PhDs. Maybe he becomes a scientist after the fact, but or maybe they retroactively gave him, they made him a scientist. I don't know.
And the thing is, I always thought when I was young, because they don't go into great detail, they just say, like, you know, he wants a steady paycheck, doesn't he? But I guess if he wanted to apply for that job, then maybe he would have to be a scientist in the first place. They don't reference the fact that, you know, he wasn't a scientist before. They just kind of make it clear that he wasn't into the whole paranormal thing. So perhaps in the lore of, you know, L-O-R-E, as it were, the lore of the Ghostbusters universe, perhaps he was a scientist before he joined the Ghostbusters. I don't know. It just seemed odd, but maybe it's correct. So, I retract my previous comment if that's the case.
My major issue is just the character dynamics. Like, they all seem to be wacky, and that's... Yeah,
like, Kristen Wiig seems to be clearly playing the more straight-laced one, I thought.
Yeah, but then the other three all seem a bit crazy, and it seems a little bit too slapstick. But
that's my major issue.
All we've seen is the trailer. It's possible,
absolutely,
that that's just to be like, oh, well, this will get kids excited about it or something.
And that's the thing; they have to think beyond, you know, the hardcore fan base who have, you know, very fond memories of the, you know, for this to be a big hit, it's got to capture the imagination of a new generation. And those kind of moments, like, I saw online, like, I was I was talking to friends who aren't big on Ghostbusters but watched it, and they're like, oh, you know, I like bits. I really like the bit at the end, though, when she slapped the ghost out of her. And I thought, well, that was my least favorite bit, because that was the most slapstick. So, you know, I think they've got to find that balance, and we have to accept that. But I liked a lot. I liked the look. I liked the, you know, the clever twist on the proton packs, as you already mentioned, Ecto 1. I liked the look of the ghosts. I actually thought it was a bit different, but I thought they looked pretty cool.
If they diversify them a bit like they did in the original movies, I'll be happier with that.
Yeah, with an interview I read with Paul Feig, he did say that he wanted the ghosts to primarily be more recognisably ghosts, as in human ghosts, but that they would become more experimental, I think, as the film went on, and you would see, you know, the more kind of traditionally wacky stuff, I suppose.
It was nice to see Slimer in there.
Yeah, it was great to see Slimer, and people forget, like, when you think of the original, you know, a lot of people, their overriding memory of the original one is of the Stay Fresh Marshmallow Man, but Gozer, the character, was actually very much in a human form, but could take the form of, you know, whatever was in their imagination, so that allowed them to be, you know, incredibly experimental, you know, to the point where they ended up with the Stay Fresh Marshmallow Man.
I mean, I just remember, like, the library ghost.
Yeah, that is...
That was brilliantly done. And obviously, like, this is meant to be an homage in the trailer with the one that spews ectoplasm all over Kristen Wiig. I don't know. Like, that's another element of it being like, it doesn't seem as scary, it seems more funny. And that's fine.
Yeah.
Well, it's that's weird fine. Because, it is, it's fine. It's just different. And I think that's what's freaking out a lot of people.
And I understand. I think this might be broader than the original one. As I said, you know, when you go back on... The thing is, people forget. You go back and watch the original movie, it doesn't actually have a huge amount of laughs. It's not a laugh-a-minute kind of film.
It's,
you know?
Mostly it's, at Rick Moranis' expense.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. There are slapstick... You know, and there are... He is a very slapstick character in
that.
There are slapstick moments, but I think, you know, are they going to have those more, as I previously mentioned, more adult moments, you know, where they can get the tone right, where you can get these slapsticky bits? Because remember, Peter Venkman got slimed and all that jazz... But then, of course, there is the other side, like his relation with Dana and, you know...
Or the bit where Ray wakes up in the middle of the night with a ghost... Or he has a dream...
Oh, about
being raped by
a female ghost.
Yeah.
It's such a weird scene. But then you have, like, the darker stuff. Like, the scene when Dana gets attacked in her flat when she's sitting on the chair and the arms come through and stuff.
Yeah,
that's
pin
quite
her down.
Messed up, you know? Especially, you know, it might look a bit more tween now with, you know, you can see the lines in the floor where the chair gets dragged down and stuff. But that's like a proper horror scene. And I hope that at least in this film, they do go for at least elements where there will be genuine scares, I suppose.
Yeah.
But, whatever you say about it, the one thing I thought they got absolutely bang on was that goddamn soundtrack. I thought they took the original and they did such a clever twist on it. You know, it's
You're not talking about the opening with the piano, are you?
No. When it comes, it's like...
Because that was awful.
Bum, bum, bum. But, you know, it was kind of the way it was brought in and integrated into the trailer.
Yeah.
It kind of... It totally got me in that kind of nostalgic mood. And I thought it worked well with those little nods that they could put throughout. But I'm not saying this film's necessarily going to be great. But I'm just... I just don't understand, again, the vitriol... What is the issue with it being four women? I like the fact that it's different. We don't want to see the same thing. Is it just because they're women? Is that the issue?
It's the internet. It's
because people are like, oh no, it's not because they're women. It's the cast. It's like, who would you put in it? Who's this magical cast that you would put in to replace?
They just want the original cast. They want.
It's nonsense. It's nonsense. But I, you know, as I said, if anything, I have slightly higher hopes. Having seen the trailer with reservations like yourself, but you know, I saw enough to think, you know, I'm genuinely interested in seeing this movie. But I mean, obviously that's one of the big movies coming out down the line. There have already been a few relatively big films. I mean, this wasn't a huge film. I saw High Rise last week. There was like a presentation with the director Ben Wheatley, who came up to Edinburgh. That's not a quote-unquote big film, but it's a very, very interesting film. They said, you know, it couldn't be adapted. I think he's done a fantastic job. It's not a perfect film. It goes off... The pacing's a bit strange. But it's a film absolutely worth seeing, I think. But, of course, the big one in terms of the films that have already come out was Deadpool, which was so much bigger than what anyone could have, I think, ever imagined. I mean...
Yeah, it was the R rating. Everyone was like, well, you immediately... It's a comic book movie that kids can't go and see. You're immediately cutting out, like, three quarters of your audience.
Yeah.
And they totally miscalculated that.
Well, they do. And, you know, the thing is, as I said, I'm not saying... And I hope they don't do this with the superhero films. I don't think it suddenly means that you need to go out and make R-rated movies all over the place. It's just a matter of building the... Basically, you make the film that makes sense, and then what the rating is what the rating is. The fact of the matter is, nobody wants to see an R-rated Spider-Man. It doesn't make sense. However, an R-rated Deadpool...
Wolverine?
Yeah, an R-rated Wolverine. Like I said, I think I said last week, like an R-rated X-Men movie doesn't make sense. You tone down Wolverine in an X-Men movie, you have to, because you can't have blood everywhere. It yeah. doesn't make sense. But in a standalone movie, you bet your ass you make it R-rated. Yeah. And then similarly, it's like the perfect example I always think is Die Hard. Nobody wants to see a fucking PG Die Hard, because yeah. Die Hard is not a PG movie. It's a violent yeah. movie. And, you know, you and the same happened with Terminator. You neuter these movies.
Did they do that with Terminator? Jeez.
Yeah, yeah. The last
I never saw Genesis. I saw up to Salvation. Oh. I actually quite enjoyed quite large parts of Salvation.
Salvation had a few moments, but it's not a great movie. But no. it's a
better
it's
than
a great,
three though.
It's I don't think so. I prefer three. But the fact of the matter is, an argument could be made for elements of Salvation. I think Terminator 3 only suffers from the simple fact that it's basically a budget version of 2. But otherwise, standing, you know, based on its own merits, it's an okay film. Whereas Terminator Genesis is shit. It is quantifiably a terrible movie.
Okay.
You know, it starts off okay, but just never watch it. Never watch it. But you finally saw Deadpool this week, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. I got to see Deadpool at the weekend. My wife and I, we don't get a lot of time off together because she only gets Thursdays off and I'm off at the weekends.
Yeah, yeah.
So she was able to get a day off on Sunday and went to see Deadpool. And
cool, cool. What did you think?
It was fantastic. It was like, it was everything I think a Deadpool movie could have been.
I'm not sure. The thing is, I think my personal opinion is it's an okay movie with a fantastic character. Like, if you go back and you think about the at least when I thought about the film, because I came out and I was buzzed, I was like, I love that film. But I was like, well, the film itself was very by the numbers. The bad guy was relatively forgettable, which often happens in these origin
in
movies.
Origin
it seems
stories.
To be universal. But he steals the show. He's what makes it and essentially turns it into a comedy, like an action comedy. And it's without question the funniest film. Like, I watched it the week after Zoolander 2, and I can tell you this much, it's a lot funnier than Zoolander 2, that's for damn sure. I think it's hugely successful in terms of realizing the character, but I think there's an even better movie waiting, which might well come in the sequel, because obviously with this being such a success, I still feel like the reins were on to a certain extent. But obviously, with the success now, I think they're going to be able to do whatever the fuck they want, essentially.
I know it's ridiculous, but he wasn't as silly as I thought he was going to be. And he was really silly.
Yeah, yeah, and he can be sillier. Like, they can go more absurd. And I still think, and again, based on interviews I've heard since, you still get the impression, like, they were still fighting to, you know, for the tone of the movie.
Yeah.
They were like, oh, you know, we want to do this, we want to do this. And they obviously got away with loads in the end. And what got the film made was that test footage, which made it into the film. The CG shot of him jumping into the car, and obviously the internet went mad, and that's what got the film made, because at that point, they were actually writing a PG version of that script because they thought they weren't going to be able to make the 18 version that they wanted or the R-rated one. Bizarrely, everyone keeps going about it being over here. It's actually a 15. It's not an 18 in the UK because,
you know, it'll be the sex scenes. It won't be the violence. It'll be sex scenes.
And the thing is, with the sex scene, a lot of it is suggestive. You don't actually see much, and that's why over here it's a 15 rather than an 18. But yeah, I still think there's room for them. I mean, you know, you think, what could they do now with a bigger budget? Obviously, they'll be more interested in integrating, you know, Cable's the obvious one. But then on top of that, it's like, do you get Wolverine in? Because you think, God, you could have so much fun with that, couldn't you?
Well, I mean, the fact that he was constantly referencing not only Wolverine, but Hugh Jackman as well, with the mask at the end.
That was brilliant. And I thought the reference when they were on about going to see Charles Xavier, and he's like, oh, which one, James McAvoy or...
Yeah, McAvoy or Stewart. I get so confused with these timelines.
That's the thing. It's like, you can't go throwing Deadpool into an X-Men movie. That doesn't work. It can't happen.
Although, to be fair, pulling those X-Men across worked really well.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, the most obvious one is absolutely Wolverine. Like, and you've got to think, surely Hugh Jackman must look at that and think, oh my God, I want in on this.
Well, I mean,
because, you know, he wants to see, you
know, relationship the two of them have, they don't really like each other very much.
Which is exactly what you want.
They are often at loggerheads. But I also really like the thought of one of Deadpool's, like, one of his dreams is to become best friends with Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And I would just love to see him fanboy out over Spider-Man. I think that would be awesome.
That would be tricky, considering he's owned at Sony, being loaned out to Marvel, but has nothing to do with Fox. So that could be a stretch. But saying that, like, I thought the whole Colossus thing worked great, where he was playing the kind of the straight guy, which was bizarre. And something you very rarely get, the Russian guy playing the good guy, you know? With his big Russian accent and stuff, and he's the good guy. But I thought Colossus, and the way they made him look, like, they really went comic book on him, didn't they? Like,
he was
huge. And that was one of my favorite scenes in the film, when he starts fighting Colossus and keeps breaking his wrist trying to punch him. That was so funny. That whole scene was brilliant. But I agree. Like, Deadpool loved it. My wife loved it. I still think there is room for an even crazier, even better film. But
I think you're right.
We'll see it. Like, the sequel's coming. I mean, it outgrossed, I think, every opening weekend. Sorry, I'll have to rephrase this carefully. The opening weekend of every origin superhero movie. It had a bigger opening weekend than the first Hulk movie, the first Thor, Iron Man, Superman, Batman. Like, that's how big it was. I'm not sure if it was bigger than Tim Burton's Batman first week, but it was absolutely massive. And I mean, you know, it goes to show, again, it's like, give people what they want, not what you think that they want.
It also shows that, you know, like, there's a kind of widespread opinion that comic book movies are starting to kind of burn people out, and I can totally relate to that, because when I look at the upcoming Marvel movies, like, I'm like, yeah, I am looking forward to that, but not to the extent that I was for the Avengers.
Well,
like,
me too, absolutely.
Civil War is probably my favorite Marvel crossover comic book. It was the one that,
me too.
It kind of had. It's the one that revived my interest in comic books. I think I was maybe like 18 or 19, and I started reading comic books again. And it was largely because of Civil War. And then I got all the spin-off comic books that tell you the kind of backstory, like the things that are happening in the gaps. And I'm glad to see that there's still space to move around within the comic book genre. Like, so that is now a solid comedy. Iron Man has its moments, but it's all Tony Stark being snarky. And then you've got darker stuff. It looks like the new Batman versus Superman is hopefully going to be. I mean, they're talking about R-rated versions. Apparently, on the Blu-ray, there's going to be an R-rated version of Batman versus Superman.
Actually, makes sense. I mean, the thing is, Civil War does look a lot darker, I think, than a lot of the previous Marvel films. But I have a similar issue with you. Like, everything I see about Civil War...
With me? You have an issue with me? What?
I know.
You're getting burnt out.
I'm getting burnt out on these Marvel films in particular. Like, I'm looking forward to seeing Civil War, but I'm not excited about it. And the same... Excuse me. About the next Avengers film, like, a similar thing to, as you said, about Civil War, one of my favorite comic books growing up was the Infinity War series, when, you know, Thanos showed up, and, you know, you had all these kind of interlocking storylines. Like, I kind of got into it through the Incredible Hulk, but then, of course, everybody ended up fighting Thanos at the end.
Yeah.
And I love that. And again, the idea of it, I'm like, God, that should be super exciting. But I've seen so many Marvel films that I can't get super excited about it. If anything, I'm actually more excited about Batman versus Superman, just because of the unknown element.
Yeah.
Like, God, this film, the fact of the matter is, I know the Marvel films are going to be good. There's no way they're going to be bad. This could be a mess, Batman versus... It'll look great.
Yeah.
But I'm quite excited by that. And, you know, as I said, the R-rated thing, it doesn't make sense for Marvel films. Obviously, they do incorporate it into the TV shows, like Jessica Jones, Daredevil. These are very dark, and they're part of the Marvel universe, so they've got it in their locker. But nobody wants to see, again, an R-rated Captain America movie. But, you know, an R-rated Batman versus Superman, I mean, you know, you go back and read those Frank Miller comics, which obviously are the inspiration for the primary inspiration for this.
Yeah.
It's pretty adult, pretty dark stuff. So, you know, I think there's an R-rated movie potentially in there, but I'm genuinely, as I said, it was specifically that last trailer for Batman versus Superman.
I got to see that at the cinema.
Oh, like when he comes through the floor and just beats everyone up, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, it did just remind me of Dark Knight, but yeah, it was very cool. Oh,
there was something about the brute. As I said, as good as the other Batman films have been, and I've obviously not the Schumacher ones, but I like the Tim Burton ones, I love the Christopher Nolan ones. The one thing that's universal is the fight scenes aren't all that great, especially the Nolan ones with the earlier films. Like, it's a lot of close combat. It's effective and realistic, but
yeah,
it wasn't all that memorable. Whereas I watched that trailer and the way he clears out
Zack Snyder knows how to film combat. Oh, that is absolutely the one thing he is good at.
But it's something about, like, the way he throws that guy into the wall. But my favorite bit is easily when that guy's like half hunched over and he punches him so hard that he lands on his head.
Yeah,
that was the wow moment for me of the trailers. I was like, oh, I just want to watch an hour and a half of Batman beating people up, because that was fun. Do you know what it reminded me of? Was the Arkham Asylum, Arkham Knight games.
I think we spoke about this last week.
Yeah.
How reminiscent it was.
But yeah, I'm excited to see that. But again, that's a film which could, with all these characters, it could go either way. But I'm very excited to see it. Of the other films coming out this year, I mean, you already mentioned Civil War. The other big, Marvel film, but obviously with Fox coming out not too long from now, is X-Men Apocalypse.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that? Because I'm not historically a massive X-Men fan.
Okay.
But I like the original. Well, I like X-Men 2, but I've actually my favorite two are arguably the last two. First Class and whatever the next one was called.
Days of Future Past. I really like Days of Future Past. I'd say that's probably my favorite X-Men movie.
Yeah, I think it's mine as well.
First Class, I don't know if I enjoyed it, largely because they messed with the characters and timeline a lot. I think I just, by the time it came into Days of Future Past, I just kind of accepted it.
Yeah. See, maybe because I don't have that connection to the series, like, I didn't care. The only issue I had with First Class was, and I think I've mentioned it on the podcast before, was Magneto turning Irish at the end of the film, where Michael Fassbender, you go back and watch that film, the last scene on the beach, Michael Fassbender just stops doing an accent, just like, ah, fuck it, I'll just be Irish. And he just spends the last 10 minutes of that film being Irish. It's quite bizarre.
Yeah.
But no, I'm the same as you. I like First Class. I loved Days of Future Past. And this one, I mean, not only am I excited by the idea of, Apocalypse being in it. I know he got a lot of shit initially with the look of the character, but I've heard that...
That was like a leaked photo shoot.
Yeah, and it was poor.
That didn't look good.
Because remember, everyone had the same issue with Quicksilver, and then, of course, he showed up and actually stole the film in the second one.
Yeah, that was so good.
That was so good.
Although, to be honest, though, if you were looking at that picture and you were able to draw your eyes away from Olivia Munn, then good for you. Because that Psylocke outfit is ridiculous. Like, it's comic book ridiculous.
Well, that's one of the great things about this being set in the 80s, is because all those costumes make so much more sense.
Oh, yeah, and it's such a great era.
What's that?
It's such a great era for the X-Men.
Oh, absolutely. Like, basically, what they can do is look at the I know it was the 90s cartoon, but they can take those, Jean Grey and all those kind of, like, Dayglow almost outfits from that were made famous largely by the cartoon. And they can, like, basically put them straight into the film because it was the 80s. And like you say, Cyclo, like, she just looks like she's come straight out of the comic book.
Yeah.
And in context of the time, it totally makes sense, which is fantastic. So, yeah, I'm really excited about that film. I think, especially, don't get me wrong, I mean, I say Days of Future Past, my favorite film. X2 was a fantastic film, but the films either side of it, like the original X-Men was okay.
Yeah.
And I don't hate The Last Stand as much as a lot of
people. Yeah, it gets a lot of shit. And I've seen it twice, and I actually remember quite enjoying it. But
I mean, there is the whole Vinnie Jones bit. You know, I'm the Juggernaut, bitch. That bit makes my fucking toes curl. But there are some cool bits, and again, maybe because I'm not as into the comic books, like, I know the whole Phoenix storyline wasn't dealt with as it is in the books, but I don't really give a shit. But what was the other... I mean, there's so many goddamn comic book films come out. I mean, the other big question mark, I suppose, is the Suicide Squad. Personally, I thought the last trailer was fucking ace. I thought it was really brave to have it, you know. But then I'm like, do I like the trailer or do I just like the song? I'm not sure. But
yeah.
if I, and don't get me wrong, you might have very different opinions in your house, because obviously your wife is a massive Harley Quinn fan, isn't she? But personally, I look at the character in the film, I think Harley Quinn looks fantastic. I think she is, Margot Robbie is there ready to steal that film. She, to me, she just looks like movie star ready. And I think they've done, you know, you can't have the kind of sequiny kind of look from the cartoons, because she was debuted in the animated series, wasn't she? But I'd be interested, again, coming from a, you know, a big Harley Quinn household, what do you think of what you've seen of Margot Robbie so far?
Margot Robbie is the right choice, I think.
Yeah,
I think she is perfect for the role. My issue is quite a shallow one, and it comes down to just costume design and the type of message they're trying to send with her.
I love the costume design. I love it. It looks so cool.
I'm a stickler for classic Harley. I don't like...
She wouldn't work in that film, though, would she? In that universe.
I guess they've tried to make them all look... It's all like street clothes to an extent.
Yeah.
Apart from maybe Deadshot.
Yeah, he's a bit more traditional, isn't he?
But I mean, I guess he is a professional assassin.
Yeah. The more I see of that film, the more, again, even Jai Courtney looks pretty cool as Boomerang.
Yeah.
The bit when he's in the body bag and he just gets out and just immediately punches someone in the face. I was like, oh, fuck, that's pretty cool. Again, another one of those films, though, that could be a fucking disaster. But I'm genuinely excited to see it, because
It's an ensemble movie that hasn't had a chance for everyone to get to know the characters.
Yeah.
To the extent where they were like, fuck it, this isn't going to sell unless we put a Joker in. So let's get Jared Leto in there.
It's bizarre, because when I first saw those initial screenshots and trailers, I was like, I'm interested in the Joker, but I'm not sure about the rest of the cast. Whereas now, having seen the last trailers, I'm more positive about the rest of the cast, but I've got a bigger question mark about the Joker now. I'm like, oh, I'm not sure if I like the look of him now.
It's another case of not liking the character design, but Jared Leto is probably going to do a really good job as the Joker.
He's going to do something interesting, if nothing else. But I actually agree. I'm not so keen on the visual design, because I think if any character kind of would work in a more traditional... with a more traditional look, it probably would be the Joker.
Yeah.
And I think maybe they've gone a little bit too off... I know they've done that with Harley, but, you know, let's be honest, Harley's not the Joker, is she?
And to be honest, that's been going on, especially in the comic books, for the last 5-6 years. In fact, since Arkham Asylum, her character design changed a lot, and then they did the new 52, and that's kind of stuck like that.
Yeah. Well, as I said, again... I think part of it is because it's an unknown quantity, and to bring, you know, we will get away from the, you know, the Marvel and DC universe, but maybe the most exciting Marvel film this year, and again, because we don't know anything about it, you know, similar to when, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy, I mean, you spoke about an ensemble cast of unknown characters. There was, you know, I had no idea of any fucking one from the Guardians of the Galaxy. I just never heard of it.
Yeah.
And I think that was the case for most people. And obviously that turned out to be one of the best superhero films of the last few years. Well, at least in my opinion. Excuse me.
I'd say Guardians 2 is probably the one I'm looking forward to most.
Yeah, obviously Guardians 2, and you know they've got Kurt Russell involved, and Kurt Russell as
he makes any movie better.
He just makes everything better. But the big question mark, I suppose, this year, and the big roll of the dice is Doctor Strange.
Oh yeah, and I'd actually forgotten about that one.
So you know that one, I think, genuinely, it's like, well, how are they going to deal with this? But you know, if anything, Marvel have proved every time, you know, we've questioned, it's like, is this going to work? Yeah, it does. You know, the only argument you could kind of levy against Marvel is that they've become a bit safe, which is quite strange, because last night Ang Lee's Hulk was on, and you go back and watch that, and like, Jesus Christ, they really did swing for the fences with that film, didn't they? But I actually think that film is worthy of reappraisal. I know it's not everyone's cup of tea, and I know it has plenty of problems, but that film is so visually imaginative in a way that so few superhero films are.
It's the difficulty of making your main character ostensibly mute when the action scenes are going. You have to make your Dr. Banner really compelling to balance out the fact that Hulk is a monster.
Yeah. I didn't actually think the Hulk was a... I mean, that kind of more... Like, he really did go for it. Like, the stuff at the end when he was essentially fighting his dad, who was a lake or something, and the bits with the dogs. But
there
was
like a JRPG.
Yeah, but the thing is, you go back and watch those films, like, it's a much more interesting movie than Incredible Hulk, although The Incredible Hulk had my favorite Hulk. Like, when, you know, in terms of the transformation...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's my Hulk. Like, I started following, like, really reading the Hulk around the 400, when he actually became the Smart Hulk.
Yeah.
But he had that look, like, you know, really muscular and stuff, and I was like, that was the perfect Hulk for me. But the film itself was a little bit... so-so. Yeah. But anyway, we've got to get away from superhero films, which is very tricky, actually, considering all the ones that are coming out. Outside of those, actually, there's a lot of big question marks, I think, because obviously we mentioned Assassin's Creed on the last episode, but the Star Trek Beyond trailer, you know, I wasn't convinced by that at all. I want to love it because, I thought especially the reboot Star Trek film, the first J.J. Abrams film, was... genuinely one of my favorite blockbuster movies of the past few years.
Yeah.
But even with the music, I wasn't sure about the tone. It just didn't grab me, the trailer.
I don't think I watched it, and I don't think I watched it on purpose.
Oh, okay, that's fair enough. I would actually steer clear of it because I'm not sure if it's going to convince you.
Yeah.
But a lot of the trailers recently haven't really grabbed me. Like, I watched the Warcraft trailer on IMAX,
yeah,
and I thought it just looked a bit messy. It didn't, again, nothing about it grabbed me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the only thing that's grabbing me at the moment is the fact that it's directed by Duncan Jones.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I loved Moon. What was the one he did with Jake Gyllenhaal? Something or another. I think it was called Something or Another. But I like both of those films. I specifically, obviously, like Moon, because I can't remember the... Source Code.
All right, okay.
Source Code, yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm genuinely interested. The only thing keeping me interested is the fact that Duncan Jones is the director, because, like, everything I've seen about it, I'm just like...
it just
not,
looks to
working.
Be full of fantasy tropes.
Yeah.
And I don't have any... I don't have any connection to the franchise.
Yeah, yeah, me too. So, but that's not my...
I don't know.
I'm approaching it, basically, as just a standard fantasy movie, as I would, like, Lord of the Rings or something like that. I have no connection to the source material. I've never played Warcraft. I never will. But that doesn't mean I shouldn't have an interest in a... an exciting trailer is an exciting trailer. And there was... As I said, it looked messy, and I didn't like the look of it. I don't know. That film's going to have to convince me, because at the moment, there's nothing exciting about it. And I feel, strangely enough, the exact same way about... the Independence Day Resurgence trailer, which again kind of felt like it didn't have... I know they had, like, a whole city falling through the sky, but it didn't feel like it had that money shot in the same way that the original one did. I know that's harder in today's kind of CG heavy world.
I mean, I think that film is 20 years old this year.
Yeah, it's crazy.
That's crazy.
I remember seeing that in the cinema on, like, Boxing Day or something crazy like that.
Yeah.
And obviously at the time, the big thing was just the visual effects. But, of course, at the end, the big money shot was the White House being blown up.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched the trailer and I was like, all right, it looks pretty bonkers and stuff. But, again, like, I'm not convinced by that at all, at the moment at least. I didn't see that and think, oh, my God, I've got to go watch Independence Day. I'm like, I'll probably go see it because, you know, I probably just will. I mean, that's just who I am. You know, these big tentpole films, I have to make up my mind on them. I want to see them.
People love the original one, and for me, it's like, yeah, it was all right, but, like, a lot of people really like the first Independence Day.
I love the first half of the Independence Day. I love, like, even when you watch it now, when the aliens come in, it's classic B-movie stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I love, I love the cast, especially in the first half. I mean, even the ridiculous, you know... is it Pullman who's the president?
Yeah, standing, like, on the White House lawn.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's in the second half when things really do go ridiculous.
Yeah, and the pilot flies into the mothership, I can remember. Yeah. Like, there's bits that I remember.
Yeah, unsurprisingly, when Randy Quaid gets involved, it all goes a little bit bonkers. I mean, you know, you're making one of the biggest blockbusters of all time, and Randy Quaid saves the world. It's like, what the fuck? But... Those opening scenes when the aliens come in, they break the clouds and they kind of, you know, suddenly hover over all the kind of, you know, the most, you know, famous monuments, buildings in the world.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, that is so effective. And, like, the whole countdown thing with Jeff Goldblum. Like, yeah. I love all that stuff. But then the second half, I'm not so keen on. But again, it's a film which is going to have to, is going to have to convince me. Mm-hmm. Are there any other big ones? I mean, I'm going to see Hail Caesar today, which
Rogue One is my big one.
Oh, of course. How the fuck haven't I written down Rogue One? Yeah. How the hell did I miss Rogue One? Is it like so obvious that I've just kind of somehow forgotten about it?
Well, I mean, it's gone right to the end of the year. We know it's got a great cast. It's got Mads Mikkelsen and it's got Alan Tudyk. And I think there's rumours that Alan Tudyk's going to be playing like a wisecracking robot.
Okay, cool.
I'm kind of looking forward to that.
I think maybe I still can't quite accept in my mind that there's another Star Wars film coming this year.
Mm-hmm.
I honestly think that might have something to do with that it's not on this list. Mm-hmm. It seems bizarre that we're getting two Star Wars films in 2 years.
Three years,
and I'm sure it'll be four and four, five and five.
Yeah.
But at the moment, at least, it still seems a little bit strange. But it will be interesting to see whether they kind of allow themselves to be a little bit more experimental with this not being a mainline release.
Yeah.
It's like, can you know, will it just look like a classic Star Wars film again?
I am
or will
really
they allow
curious.
Themselves to deal, you know, like with the expanded universe, are they going to allow themselves to go that little bit darker perhaps?
Mm-hmm.
But of course, when the last film made what, $2 billion or whatever it was worldwide, it's like, do you suddenly think, well, let's not fuck with the formula, you know? So
I don't know. I think this one, if they do it a little bit like Captain America 2, like that's how I get. I think it's going to be like a spy thriller.
Yeah.
Because you know, all we know is that it's about stealing the Death Star plans.
So
I think it could be like a spy thriller where they go undercover, and
that would be the perfect escalation. As you literally what you just said in terms of Captain America 2 to Captain America in terms of the tone, like. Captain America 2 wasn't R-rated, it wasn't, you know, a horror or anything like that, mm-hmm. but it was more serious and allowed itself to go, you know, take on more adult themes, I suppose. So maybe they will do that. Although, mm-hmm. you know, the original Star Wars did deal with incest, so what the fuck do I know? But at the moment, at least, I think because Rogue One, I'm not allowing myself to get excited because I don't know anything about it. It's still, like, I know it's set around, what, the, around episode 4, was it?
It'll be just before episode 4.
Yeah,
Because I mean, it's them stealing the plans, and it's basically how the plans get into Leia's hands to put into R2.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, it could be really good.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm a lot more excited by this. This is a genuinely interesting spin-off than, say, as we've mentioned on previous podcasts, the idea of like
the Boba Fett,
like a Boba Fett one. Like, yeah. I don't want to see Boba Fett be unless, as we mentioned, they go the Dredd route, where
Dredd
he never takes off the masks.
Or Clint Eastwood in the spaghetti westerns. Like,
if he's
a mysterious drifter, I am all for that. But
yeah, basically,
just
I
keep him mysterious.
Essentially, I want to watch a 2-hour movie about Boba Fett and not know anything more about him by the end of it.
You just want him to be badass.
Yeah, I don't want him to have an arc. I don't want to know about his childhood. I don't want to know anything about him. All I want is just the confirmation that he is as badass as we all think he is. That's it.
Yeah.
So let someone else have an arc and let Boba Fett get down to business. But yeah, we'll see. But yeah, those obviously they're the big films coming out this year. The only other one is Jason Bourne, which I think I don't think is necessary.
Is it Matt Damon coming back?
Matt Damon's back. I thought, like, if anything, you could have stopped the Jason Bourne films after the second one. The second one actually wrapped it up quite nicely. The third one, though, it's a good film, but the third one, and like, you know, you're just like, all right, that's it, it's done. We don't need to see any more Jason Bourne. Mm-hmm. But they're going back to the well. We'll see what happens. You know, they've got, you know, it's a good director on board. Matt Damon's always reliable.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure it'll be a decent film. Is it necessary? We shall see. But obviously, you know, a lot of big films coming out this year. But I think the in terms of setting the tone, the really interesting one will be to see how Batman versus Superman does, both critically and financially. You know, you say it does bomb with critics. Does the fact that it simply has Batman and Superman on the front, is that enough?
I think it largely will be.
Oh, it'll do well. Like, it's not going to bomb. Like, not with those names. But, you know, the fact of the matter is, it could bomb the series before it gets started.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, people will go and see this, but if the film is terrible, will they go and see a Justice League movie next?
Yeah, or a Wonder Woman movie.
Yeah, I mean, they really have put the cart, you know, ahead of the horse here.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, you know, if this film doesn't work, then they're in big fucking trouble. Because let's not forget, like, Man of Steel, which I like, it didn't set the world alight. So, you know, they need this film to hit big. So I think it'll be interesting. But yeah, I guess, you know, that'll be that for this week. We've talked about all the movies, or at least the big ones. I apologize if we've missed any. I'm sure, you know, I missed Rogue One, so I'm sure we'll think about something yeah. as soon as we end the podcast. But I've actually got to go and watch Hail Caesar now, which I'm quite looking forward to. Although, interestingly, my wife isn't, because she hates Coen Brothers movies, which is... I get it. I see that. I was going to complain. I get why people don't like Coen. They're quite quirky, and it doesn't work for everyone. But, yeah, I mean, this film... It looks about as cozy
like,
as you can.
It's like
get.
Just being like, oh yeah, I don't like human interest stories. I don't like stories about people.
I don't like chocolate. I don't trust people who don't like chocolate. Bizarrely, I've married someone who doesn't like the Coen Brothers films. The thing is, we have similar tastes otherwise, but Coen Brothers. Maybe I'll have to just call off this whole wedding. We'll see. If she doesn't like Hail Caesar, it's the end of our... The next time you listen to us, I might well be a single man. We shall see. But you know, thanks for sticking with us, as always, through this very movie-centric podcast. I can assure you that next week's podcast, we will be looking at the you know, the big games coming out in 2016, and we'll finally get around to that Witcher chat, which we promised.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, I will have played it a bit more by then. But until then, I suppose, is that it? Are we done?
We're good.
All right, cool. Well, thanks for tuning in for episode 55, and we sure do hope you'll tune in for 56. That's how numbers work, yeah. Until then, bye.
Bye.
Bye.